Hello and welcome to Great Things with Great Tech, episode 3. My name is Anthony Spiteri and this podcast is all about highlighting companies doing great things with great technology. And in this episode, I'm really happy to have Kevin Allen, who's the founder and chief technology officer of Probax. Welcome, Kevin.
Thank you, Anthony. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, it's good to have you on. Like, Probax is an interesting company. It's something that I wanted to have on because I think, you know, it's a bit different from the previous two episodes that we've done, which has been more focused on infrastructure as a service. Probax at its core is a backup company doing, you know, hosted backups for customers. And it's also got a really interesting history, Kevin. And I'm going to take and start this history session by going all the way back to the 1990s. And Kev's laughing because he knows why. And it's a very small world. Kevin is originally from Perth, but you're in New York at the moment. We'll touch on why you're in New York at the moment a bit later on. But you went to high school with my wife, didn't you?
I did, yes.
Exactly same year. And that was a really, really interesting sort of tidbit that I found out about Kevin years later after actually meeting him in Prindaville, actually probably about 2 or 3 kilometers down the road from where I live now. So yeah, that was a really interesting little tidbit in terms of the history and how we start this off, because I think it highlights the fact that the IT industry is so small in so many areas. And once you know somebody, there's always a link to someone else. It's that, you know, degrees of separation thing.
Yeah, I know the way that I found out there, Anthony, it's I just saw your wife's name on Facebook changed to Spiteri.
Yeah.
And I was like, I wonder how many Spiteris there are.
So there's quite a few. There's quite a few
in
around
Perth?
The world. It's like the Maltese Smith. However, yeah, it's awesome. So yeah, just tell us a little bit about how you started out of high school and what you did leading up to your first real gig. Because I think that's an interesting way just to segue, because you are the brains behind behind Probax. So I want to know what you did to start the company.
Yeah, so after high school, I went to university. I didn't find that that was the thing for me. But again, highlighting how small Perth is, that's actually where I met our current CEO, Sam Migahash.
So, yeah. Who I also know and I also worked with as well.
Yeah. So I think that was the only good thing that university did for me. So so I ended up, I went and I started doing some IT support for a mining company, as a lot of people do in Perth, because there's a lot of mining over there. And then I started doing some IT support. So I had a small MSP back in the early 2000s. In 2005, I was working out of a business incubator up in the northern suburbs of Perth.
Yeah.
There's lots of different services.
So just hold back. So when you say business incubator, was that like what I'm thinking about today with regards to, say, a programming or a startup incubator, where basically it's just a place where small businesses can run under the same house?
Yeah. So the way they have it now, like co-working spaces, it's generally like usually a big room and you just kind of sit down at whatever desk is free. But like the business incubators back then, it was like a business center. Everyone had their own office.
Right.
You just kind of shared all the facilities.
So it's co-working before co-working was a thing, pretty much.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So that was 2005. So I guess, you know, knowing the timeline, that wasn't too long out of, well, uni. To be fair, like you, I didn't actually finish my first stint at uni. So there's something in that, isn't there, in terms of about a degree and whatnot, right? Or maybe it's just the Perth University scene as well. There's too much distraction. In any case, so 2005, so you're in an office. I it's a small office. I believe there was an incident where there was a company that was working in that incubator office. You had a break-in and their data got stolen. And you had an idea. What was the idea after the data got stolen from this particular person?
So it was actually before the data got stolen. So the break-in had happened, and the woman whose office it was, she had all of her computers and her local backups that were in her office stolen. And she was obviously distraught. She was in tears. But a couple of days beforehand, I'd always been into kind of new products and things like that.
Okay.
And I'd already set up an offsite backup for it.
Right.
So then I was able to go in and get everything back. And she was just kind of amazed that that was even possible back then.
That was your moment, righto. Because before that,
moment, yeah.
So we're talking 2005. This is really honestly, before the days of Dropbox and online storage and all that kind of stuff, yep. right? So data and backup was really, the backup programs that existed either put it to tape or you had those external hard drives. Zip drives are probably still a thing. So, you know, you were able to basically see something in that.
Yeah, yeah, because I mean, there was always like the flaw back then, even if you had like a Windows backup going to an external hard drive, you're supposed to take that hard drive home. But yep. so many people just forget, or it's left to the receptionist, and if they're not in, then it just doesn't happen. So I'm like, okay, we need something automated. Let's automate this thing. And that's when yes. I went looking out to see what could be done. And luckily for her, I'd done it for her a couple of days beforehand without her even
knowing. Yeah. So you had other, you were looking after other sort of, I guess, IT, well, businesses. But then is that when corporate backup started? Was that the genesis of corporate backup back then?
Yeah, yeah. So that's when corporate backup started. So right after that, when I realized that there wasn't anything else around, I started corporate backup. And it's the same company. We just changed name about 5 or so years later.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was it.
Okay, so, and that was interesting because again, a bit of a crossover with my life and my career. At the same time where you guys were on the rise, I did hear about this company called Corporate Backup that was basically competing with the company that I was at. And at that time, I was lead engineer and architect for the company that I was at, Anatel. And we were obviously building out backup solutions at that time as well. It was brave new world. It wasn't what it was today in terms of actual software and technology. Connectivity was basically dial-up or ADSL 1 or 2 plus at the most. Maybe some customers had a mid-band fiber, but really it was just a real interesting time for the backup space. And the key differentiator, the key advantage that I guess yourselves and other people in the industry were trying to look for is, can we find a bit of software that's going to deliver us the efficiencies that we need to make this thing work? And you and I, the companies both tailed onto a company called RoboBack. Now RoboBack had a really interesting idea about super deduplication. So super reduction was their thing, right? And they had file level, they had agents back then, I think, for SQL. They had something that was...
An exchange as well.
So it was really new and groundbreaking, right? But just talk a little bit about that, because I think this points to sometimes you have hits and misses with technology, right? RoboBack kind of, I mean, we can talk about RoboBack openly because they kind of existed afterwards and they changed their name and whatever. But tell me a little bit, because I know the pain that I went through with RoboBack, but just talk about some of the challenges in those early days as it related to that.
Yeah, well, I mean, now I'm in the US, people can't really comprehend like the bandwidth challenges we had to deal with back then. Yeah. So yeah, I remember most customers had, it was 256K down and 64K up.
Yep.
So you got 64K upstream to deal with, you need that super dedupe. So when we came across RoboBack, great concept. The way that you can, you're deduping individual files, but then also deduping across all of the users. That was really cool.
Global dedupe, right? Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. But I guess as you and I both found out, it takes a lot of IO on the server side, particularly on the database side of things. And if you don't get that right, it will just grind to a halt.
Yeah, and that was a problem with it, right? The fact that at scale, like a lot of things, even today sometimes, like when you're testing it out, when you're POCing a particular solution, it works. But then when you get into the real world and when you add scale to it, real world usage, that's when it kind of shows its true colors, right? I mean, unfortunately, that program didn't have that. But I think all roads lead to better days. And I think the fact that RoboBack failed as a product led you to really partner with a company that I think was the reason why you guys kind of grew so quickly, and that was Shadow Protect, right? A StorageCraft. Can you talk a little bit about that? Yeah. Because that was the big player at the time. So now, what are we talking about now? Maybe, are we talking 2009, 2010?
Yeah, I think it was around about then, 2009, 2010. And it was actually before RoboBack had failed, where we kind of started looking at integrating or using, working with Shadow Protect, because Shadow Protect or StorageCraft, they didn't have their own cloud. So everyone was using Shadow Protect, and like they had a huge market share, especially in Australia. Everyone's using the software. Everyone wants to back them up off site, but there was no real means to do it. And people didn't want to use our software, like a backup software, to back up another backup software, yep, because then you've got two different kind of decryptions and like you've got to uncompress all the data twice. So it's going to be a really slow process. So that was kind of our first thing. So we were like, okay, well, let's build a StorageCraft or a cloud for Shadow Protect. So we built that, and it was basically just a repository for the files as they came in. Yeah. But then what we wanted to do is kind of make sure that what we had was correct. So we would go through, we would check the chain, we would check the CRC.
So this is different, right? Because that wasn't something that was out of the box from what I remember. So you guys were doing that.
Yeah. Because there was nothing cloud that you could use. I mean, you had an image manager that you could run on a remote site, but then every MSP would need to run their own image manager, and they would still need to monitor it all themselves. And then they'd need to have somewhere to store it. Like, is it going to be in their office? Are they going to pay for rack space and servers, things like that? So we kind of built that multi-tenant solution for them.
So at that point, you were still running, this is what I think is really cool about this whole story. It's like a Silicon Valley story, but not in Silicon Valley, right? Hopefully it ends in Silicon Valley for you at some point as well, in terms of sort of exit, right? But I think you guys were still up in Joondalup, which is actually, again, close to where I live right now. So you weren't even in the CBD of Perth. You weren't in a proper data center. Like, what was your setup back then in terms of how you were storing all these people's critical data?
So we actually had servers in a data center. So it was in a data center. It was out in Malaga as a Hostaway data center.
I know. So you want to know what's really, 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 really funny about this again? And I've just realized that this hasn't been planned, people. That Hostaway data center was next door to my dad's business, Wholesales.
No.
Where I worked for a number of years as a delivery boy and a store man, and did some work. So it's crazy. And Hostworks was, again, a company that started, it was a hosting company that was born out of an IT services company. I was in that data center. I walked around that data center. I was there when it was being built. That is crazy in itself, right?
We probably would have crossed paths there without even knowing it.
Yeah, exactly. Unbelievable. So there you go. Anyway, I know Hostworks well.
Hostaway.
That's right. Hostworks is something different. Hostaway. Yeah. Anyway, go ahead. And I also know that they had a dodgy generator. I was there when. So their generator was hand built.
Yeah.
Their backup. So this is how crazy. This is how crazy things were in the industry. Not only 10 years ago, right? So. The guy, I think his name was Eric. You remember Eric? Yes, Eric. He built his backup generator, the diesel backup generator, that basically was the backup for all of his data center by hand. Unbelievable. So probably didn't pass any ratings or anything like that, but there you go.
The Eric rating.
Awesome task. Yeah.
So from there, I think it might have been that big outage. Maybe they had an outage or something. Maybe we just outgrew the space that we had.
And
we
generated fail. We
actually built our own data center. So we built a data center in West Perth. It was just a very small data center. I built it, though I didn't really do any of the manual labor. So there were two other guys that came in with that. And we built like a full DC. We rented out rack space there as well.
Which one was that one?
It was called Perth DC, and it was in West Perth.
I do remember Perth DC. Yeah, so that's amazing. So this is what I mean. And through all this time, through hosting with our handmade diesel generators and all that kind of stuff, you were still building the business and getting a lot of customers. But I think what was important is at some point, and we haven't talked about this, your model effectively is from the start, when you pivoted from that IT company to a backup company, corporate backup into ProBacks, was channel and reseller, wasn't it? That was your focus.
Yeah. So when it started, we were like, I was just selling to like businesses, like small businesses, but then you find that these guys, they have their own IT provider. And even though we had no interest in being the IT provider, the IT guys still saw us as a threat.
Yep. So very common.
We'll change channel only, and here's your first customer kind of thing. And that's what we did. And everyone loved it. So
And I think as well, similar tech themes to the last couple of episodes as well, and a lot of successful infrastructure as a service and backup as a service providers, is the channel is where you do the best work, I think. And if you can provide a great interface, and we'll talk about this a little bit later on with your console, if you provide the right tools for the channel to grow as organically as possible without you doing much work, that obviously means that you spread your numbers very quickly, because that in itself, from a one to many point of view, means you can grow at an accelerated rate. And that's obviously what happened to
you.
All right. So now we're in 2010. You've moved to your own data center. Then this is about the time that Probax, and why did you change the company from corporate back up to Probax? Because I remember when you did, and I thought Probax is pretty cool. I mean, I get what Probax kind of means. It's kind of almost self-explanatory, but explain that change.
So basically when we first started, I didn't really know much about running a business back then. And I was like, okay, well, let's just make the business name as descriptive as possible. Corporate backup. Cool.
Yeah.
That's pretty descriptive. But then I found that it's hard to get trademarks on things with the word corporate in it. And it was very long, so long to type in. And we found that people weren't able to email us because they couldn't spell the word corporate.
Yeah. I have trouble with corporate. I'll be honest with you. I need the spell check.
Yeah. So we went to a marketing company and we said, okay, we want to change a name. What are some ideas? Like, how do we go about this process? And they said, ideally you want to have something that's six letters or less, with a memorable character in it. And that kind of, it actually doesn't have to mean something, but it's good if it does.
Yeah.
So then we just kind of went, okay, well, professional backups, and we just pushed that into Probax.
Nice. Yeah, it makes, like I said, it's pretty self-explanatory, but it's also self-explanatory when you explain it like that. It's all about marketing and brand, right? So at about this time, the company was how big? So how many people did you have at this point?
Three, maybe only two.
People. Yeah. That's amazing. Yeah.
Yeah.
When did Sam Megahaj come on as CEO then, in terms of, you know, because I feel like this was really the point where Probax became something bigger, right? When you split yourself out as a founder, you know, you were kind of CEO at the time, I remember, but then you realized that to grow the business, you need to do something, and that was to bring Sam in.
Yeah, and look, like a lot of time passed between those two points. So Sam only came on board a few years ago.
Yeah.
So although he had he had helped us out beforehand, but yeah, it's like his official role as CEO came in about 6 or so months ago before I moved to the US. So it was August 2017.
Yeah, there you go. Cool. And at this point now, so how many employees do you have now?
So I think we've got about 12 to 15. I say about because we're bringing on a few more developers and infrastructure and support guys at the moment.
Okay. Yeah. So let's dig into that a little bit, right? Because from a development point of view, for the longest time, you were it, weren't you? Like you were the kind Correct. Of lead and only developer for Probax.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, you know, a lot of pressure on you from that point of view. I mean, obviously I've seen what you've produced, and you're a brilliant coder. Just talk a little bit about that in terms of how you were able to sort of, I guess, develop a console from scratch. And kind of also, I'm interested in the technologies that you use to actually get that console up and running.
Yeah. So, I mean, so when we first started, so we were using the Robobax software that had its own console.
Yeah.
And then when we went, okay, well, let's build a StorageCraft cloud. Okay. Well, we need a console for that. And we don't really want to give people two different consoles. So we need to integrate them into each other. And I didn't really know anything about coding. I knew some HTML and that was it. And I just kind of learned, I learned a little bit, at university but not really a whole lot, but I was like, you know what? I can probably do this. And yeah, so I built the first console, which was called Probax Control, which was to allow people to use our current file backup software as well as the StorageCraft backups to monitor them all from one place.
Yeah, that's crazy. And actually, so what I did last night, and you know this, I think, because you got a notification, is I logged. What you guys do is you allow your partners to come on almost instantaneously without, you know, any credit cards, completely free trial, to basically come in as a reseller and say, hey, I want to use the program. I want to get into this and try it out. And I must admit, the interface is very you. Knowing you, I think you call it Hive. Is that what it's called? And bees.
That's right. Yeah.
And bees seem to be like throughout. There's honeycombs and there's bees flying around and there's a few unicorns dancing on hind legs. It's very interesting. But just talk to me about how you. because I think the bees have relevance, don't they, in terms of it's not just there for show.
Yeah.
Explain that a little bit.
Yeah, so the first Windows application that we developed was called Probax Scout, and Scout is a type of bee. And then as we were going through and developing like new products, we're like, okay, well, let's keep it all in the same thing. So when you think about the Hive, it's like the central management, like the dashboard, the platform. So the Hive is that central place where all those Scout bees work back and forth. We've also got the Queen Bee. So the Queen Bee is what we call like all of our processes that run on the back end, or we call it Beyonce as well.
Okay.
And so Queen Bee.
All right, that works. That works.
Yeah. So the Queen Bee sits there and like it goes through, because we do a whole lot of stuff that no one else does. So like a lot of verification, a lot of monitoring, and a lot of automation. And Queen Bee controls all of that, and then sends out the info to those scouts there as well. And okay. Then Honeycomb is like when you think about where the honey is stored. So honey being your data, Honeycomb is that kind of bucket where it's stored.
Right. Yeah. Okay. So just on that. So let's talk a little bit about the core innovation and services, and, you know, and what they're built on. Because obviously we've talked about Rayback, we've talked about Shadow Protect, but then let's bring it out. What are the core innovations and what services do you offer? Because it's just it's backup as a service, but you're obviously on the back end. What's powering your platform these days?
So I mean, look, as you know, the biggest player that we work with is Veeam. We do a whole lot with Veeam, and we're always trying to think of ways to get more people to consume more Veeam. I guess the reason is that a lot of the MSPs that we speak to, they're like, I've heard of Veeam, like I've heard great things about it. I just don't know how to get started, or I just don't know where to get started or anything like that. So we've got so many different things to make it easier for people to start consuming Veeam. And we do like auto configurations for people. So for example, like our Scout software, so that's an agent that someone would install, let's say they install it on a laptop, that can then download Veeam agent for Windows, it'll do an unattended install, it'll configure it and it will license it without anyone having to know anything about Veeam whatsoever.
It's like a wrapper.
So then, yeah. And then at their own leisure, the MSP can go, okay, well, let me go through the config that's been set up if they want. And they can go, okay, yeah, so this is kind of best practice of what I should be doing.
Cool. So what was your, for you, what was your innovation moment that meant that you guys were winning and were standing out? What was that innovation for you?
I mean, let's say, although like, so we had Probax Control, which turned into Hive, and that's awesome. Like it does so much and there's so much that happens behind the scene. Probably our first version of Probax Scout. So that was really the first thing, to really set us apart, because it was our own in-house Windows application that people could install, and it would, and so the original version was for Shadow Protect, that was StorageCraft software to help with the cloud side, because there can be a lot of issues that can crop up, like if you're not managing your offsite backups properly.
Yeah.
So instead of us like going to the MSP going, okay, well you need to do this, and then they come back and go, okay, well here's my file listing, what do I need to do? And Scout basically just returns info back and forth, works out how to fix a problem and does it. I can't remember who it was that was working for us at the time, but when I explained to the staff like what we're like ready to deploy, one of our staff members goes, ah, what am I going to do then? Because that was his job.
You're going to sit there and earn some money. That's what you're going to do.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. easy. Yeah. This never happens very often. You don't have to work too hard.
No.
But that's what I think when I was talking about scale and you know the ability to grow a business with such few people, it's leveraging the technology. In this case, you were leveraging, you know, Shadow Protect, StorageCraft, Veeam, but to make it work in the way that you needed to grow the business and scale, you had to do some great things on top of that software. And that agent, that Scout, is your core innovation, I feel. Maybe even more so than your console. You know, which is a great reseller-based console, but the real success story, I think, in that innovation play is that Scout. And that's kind of led to a few different things as well, right? Because you've got what's the appliance that you guys do from the air-gapped backup perspective?
Yeah, so it was called Honeycomb Virtual Tape Library. So we won Veeam's first innovation award for that back in 2018. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of, it was in the days before there was like immutable storage was a thing.
Yeah.
And I know like Gustav was always sending out emails. Yeah, but I mean, back then, like, we needed something. We couldn't just go, okay, well, let's wait a few years and see if someone develops it.
Yeah.
So, like, Gostev was always talking about air gap your backups. So I was like, okay, well, let's build something that can, like, at least serve the purpose in the time being. Okay, now that we've got immutable backups, we've changed the way that it works. But in the meantime, it's been great.
Yeah, and something else that you guys do, which I don't see too many people offering, is you offer Dropbox backup and archive.
Correct, yeah.
Explain that a little bit more, because I'm interested in that one.
Yeah, so we build our products based on what our partners ask us to build. And so one of our partners came and they said, okay, can we build a Dropbox backup? And I'm like, I guess, because most people, when you say that and they don't know enough about it, they go, okay, well, isn't Dropbox redundant? Like, but then I guess you could think about any system, like,
exactly.
And you shouldn't really have all your eggs in one basket, right?
Yeah.
So I'm like, okay. So I looked into it. We built the first version. It worked okay, and then we grew our MSPs that started taking it up, and then Dropbox themselves got wind of it, and then they got involved and they helped us build our second version of it.
That's pretty cool.
As far as I know, but look, we're not a huge company, and to get like the backing, like we had joint press releases with Dropbox, like
that's crazy. Cool. Yeah. Company
and
started.
As far as I know. Yeah, and we're still like the only, as far as I know, we're still the only company to be approved by Dropbox for backup and archive.
Wow, which
to
me
is really cool. Yeah.
If anyone's listening to this and they need Dropbox backup, you know where to go now, right? So with that, so what? How do you? Because you've done some disruptive things, but how do you yourself keep on disrupting your own selves internally? What? How do you challenge yourselves to continue to do great things?
We talked about a bit before, like we are a very small company, and when you're trying to scale a company, you need to either increase your headcount or do things smarter. So like, okay, so we're starting like a new task where like, okay, I want to get the support tickets down to as low as possible, ideally zero. So let's go, okay, well, what can we automate? Why don't we automate everything? Why don't we like just do absolutely everything on our side as well as on the customer side, given that we've got our agent, we can control both sides, and just make it so that it's really hands-off and just works the way that it was intended to. And look, we have a partner advisory council that we reach out to. We ask all of our MSPs. We've got a feature request section right inside Hive.
Yeah.
And we just want people to like know what is it that they would really love to see. And then we go, okay, well, that one sounds really cool. Let's build it.
Yeah. So being small enough and agile enough means that you can, you know, integrate these feature requests pretty quickly. And I think that's what makes it attractive as well. So you're able to do the great things backed on those particular feature requests, which is cool. So just quickly just diving into, because at the moment you guys have got data center, you've got 10 locations roughly around the world now, and you're in New York.
Yeah.
So explain to me why I'm talking to you in New York right now. What's Probax doing in America?
So first of all, I love New York. It's a great city, except for when I'm locked in the apartment for coming on 4 months. But apart from that,
history will say that this podcast was recorded during a particular pandemic. So that's why Kev is there locked in New York City.
So we've had customers in North America since before I moved here. And so like, okay, well, and it was at the time where Sam came on board and I was like, look, I want to build up our customer base over in the US. Like we've got things really wrapped up in Australia. Let's give it a go. Sam was on board. So I moved over here with my wife and my dog. And it's just so much easier to support our clients. And especially in the last few months, like we've had some really great support from Sean Noonan. I don't know if you know him.
I do know Sean,
he's been fantastic at just helping us out. And I know he helps out all of his partners, but just kind of brainstorming and things like that. And that partnership has really grown, and we've been able to leverage, not necessarily leverage that relationship, but just kind of get our foot in the door to a lot of MSPs, show them what we're made of. Because in Australia, we've been around for 15 years. Everyone knows us. Whereas over here, we've only been here for a few years, and it's really hard to just kind of...
an untapped market, in a sense, right?
Yeah.
All right. question for you in terms of like from a technology point of view. So we all know that data and backups is, well, everyone needs backup. The criticality of it is significant. You guys fill that space. Data is growing exponentially, and you would have seen this, and you've probably got the stats to back it, but this, the growth of data in the last sort of five years, in the last 2 years, is huge. So how do you balance that out in terms of, because you've got to get storage, right? It's got to, yep. Data has to live somewhere. What are your tech partners that allow you to basically grow that storage out efficiently and without blowing costs?
Yeah, so, a good example is Wasabi. Like, everyone knows Wasabi and like how cheap they are. Object storage, yeah, but obviously you can't use object storage for everything. So what we've done, we've done a few smart things where we've kind of modified some file systems where we can combine our standard block storage with object storage. And then let's say it happened recently, like it was really hard to get new servers. Yep. So we're like, okay, well, we need to temporarily push something somewhere else. So we use that file system to push it off to object storage. So it might be a little bit slower, but it'll get us by, and then we can move it back once we've got that. So it's just about doing stuff a little bit smarter instead of just waiting there. Okay, now we've got no disks. Okay, yeah, we're out of space.
Yeah, so, and that's a sort of older way of thinking. And you guys leverage AWS as well from memory?
We do, yeah. So we use AWS. So most of Hive is in AWS. We use AWS for our Office 365 storage as well, backup and archive.
Yeah, that's cool. So yeah, I guess, so you're branching out, you're definitely dealing with the hybrid approach to, you know, the problem of data sprawl and data growth, which, you know, the cloud is infinite to a certain extent, and you're leveraging that, right? I mean, we all know that that's not quite the case, and limitations do exist, but for you to be able to build that into your file at a file system level to actually do work for you and to actually improve the efficiency of that, that's pretty crazy in itself. So, yeah, kudos to you. So a couple, just before we wrap up, I just wanted to ask, you know, what for you makes a great technology partner?
It's a good question, and it is a question that we get asked a lot. Like, who is your target customer? We have MSPs of all shapes and sizes, system integrators. We've got tiny little one-man IT consultants. We've got huge publicly listed companies. I guess it's people that are just kind of fed up with having to pay for backup engineers, because it doesn't have to be like that. Like, just do things smarter and you don't have to do that. So someone that's willing to kind of give something else a try, and just see how it works, and then they can realize, okay, yeah, well, this is way better.
Yeah. And in terms of, so spinning that around a little bit, and in terms of what you guys do in terms of building your platform on top of the technology stack, the vendors, what makes a great vendor partner from your perspective as well?
I guess people that are vendors that are willing to kind of help, stay hands-on, obviously lots of APIs and whether it's APIs or PowerShell, we use a lot of, particularly with Veeam. But sometimes that doesn't exist, and you kind of like, we have to get ourselves dirty and use other parts of the software that isn't really mainstream. But really, just someone that you can bounce ideas off. So Veeam's a good example. So we talk a lot to Veeam support and R&D, and we just kind of bouncing ideas off each other, saying, okay, well, can we do this? What about if we do that? Let's just think of an outside of the box way of dealing with an issue that might come up.
Yeah, that's awesome. Cool. All right. So final question before we wrap up is, what makes ProBack stand out in the market?
I guess the whole ProBack's Hive platform, just the focus on like the monitoring, the management and the automation piece is what makes us stand out. And we provide a lot of info, a lot of checks that no one else does, and we give that information there too. We fix errors automatically for you if we can. If not, we'll let you know this is what you need to do, because knowing is half the battle, right? So
yeah,
the more info you know, the more you can sort it.
Great stuff. Well, it's a great story again. It's one for, you know, little guys building up to something that's obviously going to be quite big. So, you know, and I'm quite partial to it, because it is literally a local Perth story. That's out in America now, that's doing great things with great technology. So, Kev, before we wrap up, just do you want to give a bit of a shout out in terms of ProBax websites and your own sort of, I know you're not big on the socials, but yeah, just a bit of a shout out for ProBax.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, everything you can find about us is on www.probax.io. That's P-R-O-B-A-X. And everything on there, you can, it'll link you straight out to Hive and create a trial, have a play around yourself. And we can set up some NFR storage, some freebie licenses, get playing with some software. So if you haven't used Veeam before, we'll give you some storage and licenses for Veeam. You can just have a play around, get familiar with it.
And if anything, have a log in and have a look at that dancing unicorn on its hind legs, because that's worth the price of admission. All right, no worries. All right, thanks for that, Kevin. It's great to speak to you. Great to talk to ProBax. Certainly a company that's doing great things with great technology. My name is Anthony Spiteri. You can find me at Anthony Spiteri and anthonyspiteri.net. Great Things with Great Tech is on YouTube. Please subscribe. We're going to do some more great episodes as the weeks unfold and hopefully the years as well. There's no shortage of great technology companies. So please subscribe on YouTube. Find us on your favorite podcast station. And with that, thanks, Kev. And we'll see you guys next time.
Thanks, Anthony.